If you're looking for a podcast to help you figure out how to get more life from your air conditioning filters.
What?
Your heating and air filters.
Well, I know what they are,
yeah.
But they have a lifespan.
They do, but, you know.
You're going to what, rinse them out and reuse them?
There may be a way to expand, you know, increase their lifespan.
But you really think so?
This is not that podcast.
No, it's not.
That's sort of what I'm getting to.
And if that podcast exists, do we really want to listen to it?
Well, they're not cheap.
Well, they're not, but, I mean, they're one of those things, unless you have a, you know, reusable filter, they're disposable.
And
they have a lifespan.
And even those have a lifespan. So.
Whatever. Right. This is not that podcast.
No, this isn't.
Oh,
however,
no.
It is comedy.
Tragedy.
Marriage. Welcome to Comedy Tragedy Marriage, a podcast where a longtime married couple takes turns each episode selecting a movie, TV show, or documentary to watch. We watch it together, then we sit down and discuss why we liked it, loved it, or loathed it, and share that discussion with you. I am Stan the Movie Man. I review films at stanthemovieman.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @StanTheMovieMan or at @MovieManStan. You can follow the podcast at CT Marriage. I'm also on a couple of other places where on social media. You can follow me on Blue Sky, Threads, and Spoutable, all at @StanTheMovieMan. If you have a question for us, or if you'd like to suggest a movie for us to watch and talk about on the podcast, you can send that to us via email, comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail simply by touching the link in the description of this episode. Joining me, as always, is my other half.
Maud the Movie Broad. I got no tie-in to the title of this week's feature. I don't know how.
Yeah, well, you could call yourself Maud the Gambling Broad.
Gambling?
Yeah, because, well, I'll explain that.
Yeah,
in a bit.
You're gonna have to. Yeah, I'm just Maud the Broad.
You know, it's like a football pool.
Oh,
yeah, you're right.
That's a stretch.
Well, it is, but still. Anyway. It was my choice this week, and as you may have heard last week, on last week's episode, I announced that we were going to watch Deadpool. Deadpool, the 2016 film from 20th Century Fox. It starred Ryan Reynolds, Morena Baccarin, Ed Skrein, T.J. Miller, Gina Carano, Brianna Hildebrand, and more. Deadpool is a character from Marvel Comics. Now, since Deadpool is considered a mutant, he was part of the deal that Fox, 20th Century Fox, signed to get the film rights of the X-Men, which included all the characters referred to as mutants from Marvel Comics. That's why this is a 20th Century Fox film and not a Disney film. But it is why the next one is going to be a Disney film. Believe it or not, even though it's going to be an R-rated Disney film, and it's probably coming out under the 20th Century banner. The movie came out in 2016. Ryan Reynolds stars as Wade Wilson, who is a mercenary for hire. He works, everything from, tracking down deadbeat husbands, people who have bounties on their heads, to a guy who delivers pizzas, who is harassing a girl that he had went on a date or two, or just had a crush on, and just simply can't take no for an answer. he goes to this bar where he hangs out and where he talks to his buddy Weasel, played by T.J. Miller. And there at the bar, they have what's called a dead pool. It's like a football pool, but they place bets on when one of the mercenaries, and pretty much that's all that hangs out there is bounty hunters and mercenaries and so on and so forth, when one of them is going to get killed on a mission. They put money on that,
That's
and
not dark at all.
not a bit, but it's called a dead pool. One night when Wade is hanging out at this bar, he meets Vanessa, who is played by Mirena Bakarin, or I'm sure I'm pronouncing her name wrong. But anyway, she is this gorgeous woman who I believe is supposed to be a sex worker, but they immediately hit it off,
Yeah, they do.
and have this very sort of saucy conversation about how much time Wade can get for a certain amount of money and a gift card for, I think it's an ice cream place. And they wind up going to someplace like a Dave and Buster's. And then they go back to his place and have
Bow
sex.
chicka wow wow.
They wind up beginning a relationship that lasts over the course of a year, and their sexual escapades reflect whatever the holiday is.
To the tune of Calendar Girl in the background,
Yes.
the sexual montage happens over the Calendar Girl music underneath, which
Yes.
is cute.
Yes.
As are both of the people involved. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is pretty. Mirena Bakarin is gloriously gorgeous. So,
Yes.
yeah, they would make beautiful babies.
Yes. And there's they are deliriously happy. Wade continues doing his mercenary work. And they are involved in this torrid relationship. He pulls out a ring pop, shaped like a oversized jewel ring, and
Ring pops the question.
ring pops the question to get married. She thinks he's going to ask for something else, or suggest something else that's completely different, more short term. But they celebrate their love, and then he gets up to go to the little boy's room, and when he comes back, he passes out in the floor. When he wakes up, he's in the hospital, and he finds out he has advanced cancer. He's got it all over his body. It's in his brain, it's in his stomach, it's in his liver. It's all over. And he's gonna die. And he's depressed. He doesn't want to inflict his failing body and the ugliness of chemo and all of that on Vanessa. So, what else is he gonna do? And he's sitting at the bar, and this guy approaches him, and who is aware of his diagnosis. How he knows, nobody knows. And he says, "We might be able to help." And he gives him a card with just a phone number on it. Initially, Wade blows him off, but thinking about it and the possibility of having a life with Vanessa, the guy says, "We can turn you into a superhero." Wade packs up in the middle of the night, leaving Vanessa, and calls the guy and goes to this, really, it's just a warehouse. And he, gets strapped down to this gurney, and it looks like something from out of one of the Hostel movies. Something's going on. As he gets rolled through, he sees guys with these giant spikes growing out of their backs, people screaming, that's where he meets Ajax, who's played by Ed Skrein. Ajax is this somewhat sadistic person in charge of what is essentially a research project. He and Angel Dust is his assistant. She's played by Gina Carano. What they're actually doing is conducting experiments on people who are down on their luck or dying. The plan being they are trying to activate the mutant genes in their bodies by putting them under extreme stress, and also pumping them full of all kinds of experimental drugs, hoping to create new mutants where there weren't mutants before.
And everybody's how everybody's mutation manifests is different.
Yes, everybody's is unique. Like the guy with the spikes growing out of his back. What Wade doesn't know is that they aren't becoming superheroes, they're becoming slaves. They're going to strap some sort of control collar around his neck, and he will be sold to the highest bidder, which probably means some third world dictator. But they subject Wade to all of these various drug
Experiments.
cocktails, and then these various forms of what are essentially torture. The last of which is putting him in essentially a hyperbaric chamber and pulling out as much of the oxygen or as much of the air as they can until his heart rate drops to almost nothing. And then they put the air back in, and then when it comes back up, they start taking the air out again, essentially, suffocating him over and over again in an effort to try to create to force the mutation. And that's what happens. But his skin gets all mottled looking.
He looks like he's been burned.
Yes, it looks like yeah. He's just it looks like he's been doused in gasoline and set on fire, but he's not. What essentially has happened is his mutation is healing, much like Wolverine. Any injury he has will heal, no matter how extreme it is, and unfortunately, it has also put his cancer into overdrive. Now it's curing the cancer, but the cancer just keeps coming back. So this is constant back and forth. And the his skin is become involved in that too. So he's got this as TJ Miller puts it in a way that is far less polite than I'm about to say, it's like an old avocado had sex with another old avocado and gave birth to an old avocado. But yeah, he's all mottled up and looks awful. And because he has been so snotty to Ajax and found out that Ajax's real name is Francis. Ajax is just going to leave him in that chamber to die. He's going to, suck all the air out of the room. And Wade finds a way to get out by blowing up the whole facility practically.
He's super resourceful like that.
Yes.
And it was a great explosion.
Yes. And he and Ajax get in this fight, but what he doesn't know is Ajax can't feel anything. He can't feel pain. He also has extraordinary strength. So, I mean, he can beat him up all he wants, but he can't feel pain. He's going to have to kill him in order for this to be over. But Ajax gets the best of him because Wade has just had this mutation, and he winds up impaling Wade through the body with a big piece of like rebar, while the whole building burns around him. Jump forward in time a little bit, and Wade is he's sort of stalking Vanessa, but at the same time he's just trying to keep an eye on her. He wants to tell her that he's still alive, but he also doesn't want to inflict what he looks like now on her. He goes to TJ Miller, where they have that conversation about you know, avocado and, you know, all that stuff. And he decides he's going to look for Francis by trying to find a link between some of the people he's had contact with that leads back to Francis. So, and in the process, he develops what his look is, and that's the red and black suit. And the rest of the movie is him on this mission to track down Ajax, Francis, who tauntingly said, "I could fix your face and your skin, but I don't wanna because you've been such, you know, so mean to me. So I'm just gonna leave you that way." So he wants to track down Francis and get him to fix him, fix his face, and then he's gonna kill him. But he, you know, he winds up running into all these various characters and misadventures. He meets Colossus, the giant metal guy from the X-Men. Blind Al, who is portrayed by Leslie Uggams, who he lives with, elderly woman, and he takes on a on the persona of Deadpool, who is the merc with the mouth, and he's. While I have not made this sound funny, the movie's very funny.
It really is.
From the opening credits. The opening credits do not tell you who's in the movie. They're all joke credits, all of them, from the various actors and actresses to the writers and director. They're all joke credits.
Spoofs, yeah. Very funny.
There are lines in the film where Reynolds makes reference to the Green Lantern movie. He says when he becomes a superhero, when he's in the warehouse before he goes through all the torture and stuff, he says, "Just don't make my superhero suit animated or green," which is a reference to Green Lantern, the Green Lantern movie. And there's a reference to when he played Deadpool in the X-Men Origins Wolverine, which did not look anything like Deadpool that was actually in the comics or in this version of Deadpool.
We also have a couple of little sneaky cameo-esque appearances by Hugh Jackman.
Yes, we do. There are references,
which are very funny,
to Hugh Jackman. There are references to Ryan Reynolds by Deadpool, and the whole, and plus Deadpool addresses the audience.
Breaking the fourth wall.
Yes, there's a lot of fourth wall breaking. And that first scene where Deadpool is sitting on that overpass, that first action scene, that is a piece of, I don't know if they redid it completely or if they just used it whole, but there was some test footage done of what a Deadpool movie could look like. And it was quote unquote leaked. And the online response to that test footage was so positive and so vocal that it was like 20th Century Fox went, I think maybe we need to make this movie. So they started the process of making the movie. You know, allegedly at the time anyway, nobody knew who leaked the footage. Reynolds might have been responsible. And the footage that was leaked is almost identical to what you see in the movie.
Is this leaked with quotation marks around it?
Well, or yes, but I think it was leaked intentionally in an effort to kickstart this project. Because nobody, well, you know, I say nobody, this project had been kicked around in one form or another for a very long time, since before X-Men Origins Wolverine. And then it just sort of languished. And then this test footage came out and it was like, oh, that looks really good. It could be very, very funny. Also, there is a natural reticence to not produce, not to make an R-rated superhero movie. There's just a fear that not enough people over the age of 17 will come to see it to make it, you know,
worthwhile.
Make it a financial success. And I think there have been enough R-rated superhero movies that have been huge financial successes to where that is not.
That's
not a valid concern anymore. But at the time, an R-rated superhero movie was a huge risk. So if this had not done well, you would probably never see another R-rated superhero movie.
Deadpool was from, what, 2016?
Yes, 2016.
Okay. So it's been a minute.
Yes. The Marvel Cinematic Universe was in full swing. So they obviously had an audience for superhero movies. DC was, you know, fiddle farting around, trying to get theirs started, and it was sort of hit and miss, mostly miss. And then. The X-Men movies had done okay. That was 20th Century Fox. The Fantastic Four movies, the first two that Fox did, were not good, but they financially did enough. The first one did enough to justify the second one. Neither of them are great, but they're fine.
They were viable.
Yeah. And there were several X-Men characters who could carry movies alone. Wolverine has had three standalone movies now, and then Jackman had quote unquote retired from the role with Logan. where the character, you know, spoiler alert, died.
Nobody's ever really dead in a superhero world.
In a comic book movie, that is correct. Because there are multiverses. Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine that is coming out later this year, the Wolverine we're going to see is from a different universe than the one than the Logan that we saw die at the end of that film. So, you know, that's fine. But you know, there's all of these characters that could probably carry solo movies. But these two characters, Logan and Wolverine and Deadpool, have a very long history in the comic books as frenemies. Are, you know, they can't kill each other because they both have healing factor. And Wolverine has, you know, the adamantium claws that come out of his hands. Deadpool has his, if, you know, proficiency with guns and his katanas. So,
His what now?
swords.
Oh, okay, thank you.
You know, and they just beat the crap out of each other or shoot each other to pieces, and then they heal and they just do it again. So they eventually come to some sort of understanding that, you know, they can beat each other up, but they'll need to work together if they're going to fight against the bad guy. In this film, in Deadpool, we're establishing his power set, which is his healing factor. The fact that he's a smart ass, which makes him endlessly endearing, really. You know, his in this film rather endless level of optimism, with his catchphrase,
Maximum effort.
maximum effort. He says that whenever he's getting ready to go into any battle that looks like it could be significantly stacked against him. But you know, maximum effort, and that's how he goes into all of it.
He's like the little Deadpool that could.
Yes, indeed. And while this is certainly a much more comic accurate version of Deadpool, Deadpool has done in the comics apparently has, and I can't say that I've ever read any Deadpool comics. I'm only going by what I've seen online. He's done some really weird, crazy, universe bending and ending stuff that I don't think would ever make it in a movie. And it's, you know, but it is a character that has an enormous amount of potential for a series of films that, you know, kind of got sidetracked because of COVID and of course the writer's
Strikes.
strike and the actor's strike. They had just started production on Deadpool and Wolverine when the actor's strike started. And or it might have been when the writer's strike started and they in solidarity.
The
Anyway,
writers went on strike as well.
yeah.
I mean, the actors went on strike as well.
So anyway, but production was shut down. And then they, you know, they got it all started back up. There have been two trailers released. And To be quite honest, I am looking forward to seeing this third iteration of this character. Now, in this version, like I said, we're establishing Deadpool. We're establishing he's not really a team player kind of guy. Although, if forced to, he will play with others, just not nicely. But he's constantly berating or, you know, talking down to his teammates, but he's also, you know, trying to do the best he can given what he has. I thought Deadpool was a lot of fun when I saw it the first time, and I enjoyed it this time as well. What did you think about it?
Ryan Reynolds is just likable.
Oh, yeah.
If he were not handsome, he would still be a star just because he's likable. And that carries a lot of weight with somebody like me. I enjoy somebody who has a tongue-in-cheek, dry, self-deprecating sense of humor. I love it when breaking fourth wall works. And in this movie, it definitely does. I love that he, in making reference to Professor Xavier, he's like, are we talking McAvoy or Stewart? The timelines get so confusing. And I'm like, oh, that's good. It was just a ton of fun and entertaining from the get-go, including, as you said, the opening credits, because they were all spoofs. And not necessarily flattering spoofs either. They were sort of like jabs and insults to who the actors and the writers and director and all the things. It was just a lot of fun. I remember Morena Baccarin from Gotham. Mm-hmm. And other things. She's instantly recognizable. And I'm a fan of her. She's a wonderful actor. And, you know, this film was no exception. The chemistry between her and Ryan Reynolds was fun and engaging and goofball. And a lot of the scenes between them sort of, for me, harken back almost to screwball comedy, where their dialogue is just so charged between them. They're comparing, you know, who had the worst life, who had the hardest life coming up. And that, again, was also very tongue-in-cheek and very witty. I really enjoyed it. So it gets good marks from me.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad. I wasn't concerned that you wouldn't like it. I just didn't know if it would, you know, strike you as...
if it would work for me.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Because that kind of decides what we're going to watch in 2 weeks.
Well, okay then.
But yeah, this is it's just fun.
It's just fun.
It's just dumb fun. Speaking of which, we'll be talking about dumb fun in what we've watched, but
was it profitable?
Oh, kinda. Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know. You're the person who does all that research.
I was just getting to that, but let's get to
the stats.
The stats.
If you hear noises, I'm doing a little bit of nail maintenance while we do this. So
the film had a budget of $58 million, which for a superhero movie,
it's not that, you know,
especially one that's CG heavy, because pretty much every, you know, those car crashes at the beginning,
fabtacular explosion,
that anytime you see like the blood spray or, you know, any viscera coming off of a body that Deadpool has shot, or anything that would be very difficult to make look good in practical effects was probably CG. all, you know, as CG heavy as this movie was, $58 million is a bargain. Worldwide, it made $783.1 million.
Decent.
That is an R-rated superhero movie. So,
we do see Ryan Reynolds' buttocks.
We do. There is some nudity and some sexual
content
interaction themes going on there.
There's a lot of language. A
lot of language and some sexual references
and
as well.
Gore, guts.
Yeah, a fair amount of gore.
Violence.
Although this movie not nearly as gory as Deadpool 2.
Oh, good to know.
So keep that in mind. This movie's definitely not for children.
Duh.
You know, it is R-rated for a reason.
For several reasons.
Well, yes. Mostly for language, but also a fair amount of gore. So keep that in mind.
And a little bit of Ryan Reynolds' buttocks.
And there is some nudity in Ryan Reynolds' buttocks. The critical response on Rotten Tomatoes, it got an 85% approval rating from 348 reviews. And on Metacritic, it got a 65 out of 100, generally favorable reviews. CinemaScore gave it an A on an A-plus to F scale. And the service called PostTrack reported an average positive score of 97%, with 45% of filmgoers saying the film exceeded their expectations.
Cool.
So, I, of course, am giving it 5 stars. And Maude?
Yeah, 5 big exploding warehouses.
Okay. So, that's Deadpool. It's available on Disney Plus, and you can rent it on all the usual suspects. What else have you been watching, reading, listening to, so on and so forth?
Okay, so let me pull up my bookish stuff, because I booked this week. Derp. All right. Okay. So, late to the party, but my library branch's copy of Dr. Seuss's The Lorax came in this week after having been borrowed. And I kind of basically knew what The Lorax was kind of about, but the children's sermon in church a couple of weeks ago talked about The Lorax in the context of Earth Day and conservation and that kind of thing. And I'm like, I've never actually sat for a minute and read this. So I sat for a minute and read it. And of course, like all the other Dr. Seuss stuff, loved it. It's wonderful. Love the poetry, love the illustrations. Dr. Seuss is classic children's literature for a reason. So Maude has finally read The Lorax. I feel much more literate now.
While it was not critically well received, I thought the Lorax animated film, made maybe 10 years ago, maybe less, was good as well. But for some reason, most critics didn't like it. But
was it like Seussian looking animation?
Well, the characters were Seussian looking, but the animation was 3D,
okay.
CGI.
Okay. Elsewhere, doggone it, I keep mashing buttons that I don't mean to mash. Okay. Elsewhere, I read a book called Midnight at the Christmas Bookshop. Yes, I know it's not Christmas time, but this is still on my new releases shelf. It came into us last fall, and I looked at the premise and I thought, okay, this looks appealing to me. So I really enjoyed it. It's by author Jenny Colgan. She is a New York Times bestselling writer. She also wrote one called The Christmas Bookshop, which I need to probably go back and visit since I've read Midnight at the Christmas Bookshop. It talks about, the story is about a bookstore that's barely keeping its financial head afloat. The protagonist, who is trying to save it, a love story plagued with misunderstandings and several laugh-out-loud moments in this. Jenny Colgan delivered a really sweet story here. On the opposite end of the spectrum, equally sweet, but very different, I read a book that I bought when we were on vacation a couple of weeks back called The In-Between. It is written by a registered hospice nurse, a young woman named Hadley Vlahos. She actually lives in Northwest Florida, very close to where Stan and I lived for a period of time early in our marriage. Full disclosure, I was a hospice volunteer for a number of years, and the topics surrounding near death and end of life have always sort of fascinated me. And this one is the latest in a string of books I've read about this kind of thing over the years. The stories in it rang very true for me, just with things that I have seen sitting at deathbeds in the hospice, the hospital, and with my own family. Nurse Vlahos talks about these patient experiences while weaving in her own life stories and how she landed in hospice nursing as a vocation. It's a quick read. It's very meaningful. And to anyone who is interested in these types of topics, it's not for everyone, but eventually, A, we're all going to die, and B, we're all going to have a loved one who dies. And so I think that books like this can help us prepare for those types of situations at the end of life. And I really strongly recommend it. Again, Hadley Vlahos, RN, author of The In-Between: Unforgettable Encounters During Life's Final Moments. Really, really good. So, and, you know, stuff I watch, it just kind of, I have been going back on Peacock and streaming old episodes of Law & Order SVU just because that's what I've been in the mood to watch. So, I have been watching some of those, and they're, you know, the magic of that ensemble cast in those early seasons particularly is just unbeatable.
It is their 25th anniversary.
It is.
And they are doing some sort of, oddly enough, a Mother's Day marathon.
Oh.
On, I think, USA Network.
Yeah, USA has had SVU marathons for different holidays for a very long time.
Which seems a little weird, well, at least on Mother's Day.
Well, you know.
Like killer mothers or, you know, whatever.
Well, and it's a very, you know, there's strong females featured in the cast, so it yeah. actually does make sense.
Yeah. So, anyway, but that's what's going on with SVU.
Elsewise, anything else I've watched has probably been with you.
Well, one of those things is the Netflix original film Unfrosted.
Oh my God, so great! And a lot of my Facebook friends are digging it too, so.
And by so great, I think what Maud is saying is, it's terrible.
It's a cheese fest, but with cereal and Pop-Tarts.
Yes, it is objectively not a good movie.
It's so fun, though.
But it is so silly, you can't help but laugh at it. And it is full of funny people, like Jerry Seinfeld, who not only stars, but directed it. And is also joined by some of his stand-up comedy friends like Jim Gaffigan. And there are other people in it who are comedians or comedic actors and just plain old actors. There's some folks you'll recognize from SNL. There's some folks you'll recognize from like The State.
Melissa McCarthy. Hello.
Yeah, Melissa McCarthy is in it, and Hugh Grant is in it, playing the voice of Tony the Tiger, but he also wears a Tony the Tiger costume.
And I don't really think that Thurl Ravenscroft was English.
And I don't think he was ever actually in a Tony the Tiger costume.
Yeah.
There's people from SNL in it, and it's just chock full of people that if you don't know their names, you know their faces.
So much fun.
Amy Schumer plays Marjorie Post, the heavy of the piece.
Head of the Post Serial Empire.
Yes. And she plays the leader of the company across the street, and Kellogg's, the alleged good guys of the story, their main rival, as they all try to come up with this toaster pastry that will be the next great thing for breakfast, but they unwittingly make enemies of the milkman, which is sort of a side plot that really never really goes anywhere.
Hello, Christian Slater.
And Christian Slater's there. We also get what's his name from Game of Thrones, the little person.
Oh, dang it! Let me look.
Okay, but. Yeah, I mean, and there are people who are in this movie for like 10 seconds.
Peter Dinklage.
Thank you, Peter Dinklage.
Thank you.
And he's in it for a little longer than 10 seconds. But there are people who are in this movie for, you know, just a flash. And if you blink, they're gone. But I have to admit, even though it's not a good movie, it made me laugh through the whole thing. And it even manages to work in some political commentary. It is just the silliest thing you've ever seen.
Quaker Oats is represented by an actual Quaker.
By an actual Quaker. Yeah, like it's like the guy from the front of the box come to life.
Yeah.
Is like the person who's actually in charge of Quaker Oats is an actual Quaker. You know, it's just, you know, it is so ridiculous, but it is also very funny in a very silly way that you just kind of have to go, okay, this is just going to happen now, so just let it wash over me.
I loved it.
That's called Enfrosted. It is on Netflix. We also watched an episode of My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with David Letterman on Netflix. And that particular episode was with John Mulaney, who I think is a brilliant stand-up comedian.
Oh my gosh.
Who has apparently had a far more troubled life than any of us knew. Perhaps of his own causing, because of his various addictions to drugs.
Well, yeah, he's in recovery.
Yes, he is now in full recovery. Before, he may have just sort of been dabbling with recovery while also dabbling, you know, with
not recovering.
With not recovering. He talks with Dave about a little bit about his intervention. But they shot part of it at his high school.
In Chicago,
where he had not been since he left it, since he graduated. And then, you know, the other part of it is shot in a theater where he's, you know, where Dave is interviewing him. And they also have a brief snippet of his show in Biloxi, Mississippi at a casino. As well as Dave at a dinner with Mulaney and his father, which seemed a little tense to me.
His dad seems like he has a stick up his butt.
A little bit. But it's like John was sitting at attention the whole time, and he rarely looked at his father, at least in the scenes we saw. You know, we only had just very limited amount of coverage of that, but otherwise the whole special with John Mulaney is My Next Guest Needs No Introduction is terrific. I love John Mulaney. I've seen him live one time at the Tennessee Theater here in Knoxville. He was, I laughed so much, I was tired when I left.
Did I go to that show with
You did
you?
not.
I
I
was
think you had
thinking.
somewhere else you needed to be, or you just didn't want to
I
go.
hate I missed that. How long ago was it?
Oh, I don't know. It was way, seven,
Way
eight,
long ago.
9 years ago, somewhere around in there. But yeah, if you get a chance to see him live, I highly suggest it. He's terrific. And this particular installment of My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with David Letterman is terrific. So that is also on Netflix. And we've been, did we mention The Veil last week?
I think we mentioned it. We hadn't watched any of it yet.
Oh, okay. So do you want to talk about The Veil?
On Hulu, there is a new limited series starring Elizabeth Moss, who we love. Anything she's in is great. And it is called The Veil. She is a British
Secret agent.
secret agent, and she is sent to Syria, and it's winter and blustery and cold, and she's sent to Syria to find this woman who is allegedly a huge leader in ISIS. And it turns out that the woman she sent there to chase may not actually be the ISIS person, but just someone who looks like her and is being mistaken for her. The first two episodes dropped. We watched those. We have a third one that's waiting for us. But it promises intrigue and espionage, and Elizabeth Moss's character appears that she's going to be something of a rebel who follows her instincts rather than necessarily always following protocol.
Yes.
So, I'm all in for this, and if Stan wants to be all in with me, he's more than welcome. But
I'm interested.
if not, I'm gonna watch it anyway.
Yeah, I'm interested. All right. Well, anything else?
No, next week is my turn. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us for this edition of Comedy Tragedy Marriage. We appreciate it. Give us a like, rate, review, follow on Spotify or wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you want to help us out the best that you can, please share us with your friends on social media. If you have a question or a movie you'd like to suggest us to watch and talk about on the podcast, send that to us at comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also send us that by clicking the link in the description of this episode. I'm Stan the Movie Man. That's Maud the Movie Broad. Love you.
Love you.
And until next time,
Later.
later.